the power to do things that they wouldn't otherwise be able to do. And so they could pass laws that govern just federal elections that are extremely problematic from the perspective of democracy. They could draw, for example, as in North Carolina, incredibly gerrymandered congressional districts. They could even potentially create systems in which a state legislature gets to resolve any disputes over election results in federal elections, which would include presidential elections. And we could imagine what that might look like down the road. It could be extremely dangerous. Much of that, if not all of it, would be unconstitutional under many, if not all, state constitutions. But they under the ISLT, that wouldn't matter.
Finally, we just have 30 seconds. How does this relate to the Voting Rights Act?
Well, they're both the Voting Rights Act and the ISLT, or the movement against the ISLT, are ways of trying to protect voting, protect the power of the people to choose their own representatives. And in those cases, as in others, the Supreme Court, the majority, continues to cut back on protections for voting and protections for democracy. It's extremely dangerous.
And again, ISLT stands for something you'll be hearing much more of with this court, the independent state legislature theory. And we want to thank Professor Carolyn Shapiro, Professor of Law and Director of the Institute on the Supreme Court of the United States at Chicago Kent College of Law at the Illinois Institute of Technology. We'll link to your piece in the Washington Post. A new Supreme Court case threatens another body blow to our democracy. I'm Amy Goodman.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. The time is 8 a.m. Next up is Wednesday Talk Radio with Paul Roland.
Which way, America? Which way, America? Which way, America? Which way to go? This is my country, and I want to know which way America is going to go.
There is many a road to travel, many a hill to climb. I'm gonna find the straightest road and walk it till the end of time. Which way, America? Which way, America? Which way, America? Which way to go? This is my country and I want to know which way America is going to go. Which way, America? Which way, America? Which way, America? Which way to go? This is my country and I want to know which way America is going to go.
There is many a storm before us, many a choice to make. I'm gonna ask the Lord above to show me the road to take.
Which way America? Which way America? Which way, America? Which way to go? This is my country and I want to know which way America is going to go. Which way, America?
Okay, that's about enough of that. All right. Well, you know, July 4th was just a couple days ago. And that was the inimitable Up With People. Anybody remember that? From the Chic television color spectacular, featuring the Colwell brothers in a cast of 130. As my board operator Ty was pointing out, they used to perform at Super Bowl halftimes and such like. Yeah, they're kind of like a almost Broadway type, you know, sort of kind of part hip, very patriotic, kind of a mid-60s phenomenon. This record's from 1965. Anyway, I just couldn't... I used to have a folk music show here on Thursday mornings, two Thursday mornings a month, and I would occasionally play stuff like this, especially around July 4th. So please indulge me. Yeah. So which way, America? That's a very valid question. I assume a bunch of you heard the Democracy Now! About the Patriot Front marching in Boston. Isn't that the same one that we're trying to wreak havoc on the Pride Parade Festival in Idaho, Coeur d'Alene, just a couple months ago? I didn't hear much about that. Am I wrong about that? I thought that's who that was. Anyway, yeah, these the fascists are still on the loose and still seemingly gaining traction. They're not going anywhere, folks. And with this Supreme Court, boy, it's definitely taking a hard right turn, this country, in terms of you know, overarching sort of legal framework, ability to do and not to do, to carry guns and not to have abortions. And looks like the voting rights might take another hit. Which way, America, indeed. So, you know, what's wrong with this country? I guess that's, I want to sort of put that out there. What is wrong with the United States of America? I have very clear ideas. Certainly many of my guests have, many of my callers have, but I don't know, this is your chance to vent. You could show your, the depth of your historical and cultural analysis, or you could just vent. My country, the serial killer. Kind of how I put it. I was looking up remember Brian Wilson? He used to, I don't think he still lives in Portland. I heard maybe he went to Nicaragua. I'm not sure. Anyway, the activist, the Vietnam veteran, anti-war activist who protested the bomb trains outside of in the Bay Area, and they didn't stop and ran over him and took off his legs. Anyway, he's got a website, brianwilson.com, two L's, where he lists all the invasions of the United States over the past century plus of other countries, many, many in this hemisphere, something I've been talking a lot about since that remarkable victory of the left party in Colombia, Petro and Marquez, and sort of a reflection on this pink tide that for me and probably for a lot of people has just sort of crept up on us. A lot of people who are paying attention, like I'm sure the Portland Central America Solidarity Committee and others who make it their business to pay attention to this. For a lot of us, it's probably gone under our radar that there's been this really remarkable resurgence of the left in Central and South America, such that there's, I don't know, it seemed like 8 or 10 now left-wing led governments, and many of which are speaking very different than the kind of traditional leftist language, sort of more, I guess, keyed to the traditional Marxist, Soviet-allied time. Not that Marxist time is gone. The Marxist analysis still remains incredibly powerful, but I think it needs to be kind of continually updated, and some people don't do that. Anyway, you know, the Petro and Marquez are talking an anti-extractivist when, I mean, if you look at regimes around the world that don't have the developed industrial capacity of the United States, Western Europe, now China, etc., tend to go for the easy if they have it, if they've got the resources, if they got the oil, the coal, the gas, the, you know, they tend to go for that and in many cases sort of substitute the kind of a path of industrial development that the quote West took. So yeah, some people are talking some really interesting rhetoric. We'll see how far they go. And you know, which way, America? there's another side to that, another part to that, because obviously America is way more than just the so-called United States of America. There's the combined nation states of America. And so to answer actually that question, which way America? Well, maybe it's tending toward the left. So what are we in the United States going to do about it? Of course, you know, what is the left? What is the right? That's an interesting conversation. Anyway, the number here is 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. I'm Paul Rowland. This is Wednesday Talk Radio. I'm here alone with you, the listener. And if you dial that number, you could join me. I'd love to hear people who don't really call in regularly or semi-regularly, people who maybe never called in, you know, maybe people who tend to, you know, feel more confident or feel like they have something to say, maybe more than others, whether they do or not. You know, generally they do. I like what people have to say, call in. Not always, but, you know, maybe they could kind of step back and let other people step forward. You know, women don't get too many women's voices. I don't know if there's maybe it's me. I don't know. Maybe it's, I don't know if there's a bigger explanation of why more women don't call in my show and other talk shows. I imagine if it was a woman hosting, it would be more likely to attract women callers. That's probably, but I am what I am. Anyway, so yeah, I'd like to get people who don't tend to call up. You know, maybe older white guys like myself step back for a while, you know. But if you got something burning to say and nobody's calling, please call in 503-231-8187. What is wrong with this country? It's like a monster that produces monsters. It's this, it's a Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. You know, these mass killers, where are they coming from? There's so many broken, psychically broken people. This country does it to them. Why? What's going on? What is up with the United States? I want to know. I want to know what you hear. I better go to my KBOO Wednesday Talk Radio page and see who might be calling in. 503-231-8187. That's the number. And looks like we got a caller. Who might that be? Norm. Go ahead, Norm. You're on the air.
Oh, yeah. Hi, Paul.
Hi.
Thank you. I love your show.
Thank you.
Well, okay. We're venting. I'm not sure who said it. Maybe it's Dr. King. I'm not sure. The moral arc of the universe tends towards justice, and I don't believe that anymore. I agree with Hannibal Lecter. This world is ruled by chaos, and you know,
chaos. What does that mean?
Pardon me.
Well, what does ruled by chaos mean?
You know, basically, you know, in the logical lexicon, good and evil are equivalents on the opposite end of a scale. And what happens, you know, not so much randomly, but it's not controlled by an intelligence. You know, the universe isn't controlled by an intelligence. It wasn't created by an intelligence. I don't understand why people can't handle the fact that just happens.
Well, yeah, it happens, and it sometimes it happens. I mean, Wow. Yeah, you're opening up a complex conversation. I would, you know, I agree personally that there is no as I don't know, Zizek, who I kind of disenchanted with now, but the idea that there's a big other, that there's this sort of, yeah, like you say, a conscious knowing force that, you know, that is the sort of a universal consciousness or something that some people call God, and that the implication of the King quote that it the moral there exists a moral arc of the universe that is this sort of big other. There is this unifying force of the universe that a lot of people call God that bends towards justice. I don't think that exists. I don't think I think the universe is amoral in the sense that it doesn't tend in any particular direction morally. I think, you know, I'm more of an existentialist along those lines. I think, you know, we create our own good and evil, and we create what, you know, the structures of society that we live in. But I do think that there are, you know, there are conscious, you know, conscious and unconscious, but there are forces, there are social forces, there are classes, there are social dynamics that are historically developed in the United States as, you know, the nation state system, you know, grew out of the breakup of the feudal system, the Holy Roman Empire, et cetera. There were earlier, you know, the whole empire system, hierarchical culture. Anyway, the United States sort of claimed to be different from them, but ended up basically being the same, in a lot of ways worse. But, you know, I think we can understand the power, how those power dynamics arise historically, who they benefit, why they operate. I don't think it's all chaos. I think we can understand it.
Yeah, okay. You know, perhaps I'm simply despairing when I say...
I hear that.
What I said. And, you know, unfortunately, our side isn't armed, and the other side is okay with killing children. And I really resist, you know, hating the Democratic Party in this country for letting this situation get out of hand as the way it has.
Well, I mean, that's...
I don't know how shocked you were, but I was absolutely thunderstruck, and I had to talk my daughter out into moving to Thailand, you know, after the 2016 election. And you know, I take refuge in music and poetry and bike riding and exercise and mountain climbing.
Okay.
And yeah, sure, I'm gonna vote for the elected for the candidates on the D side, and you know, that's all I'm gonna do. And I am certainly not gonna go on a march.
Okay.
Ever again. You know, I'm a dad, I'm a brother, I'm a son, and the folks I love, you know, they're afraid, you know, that I'm going to take a bullet if I go to a march.
Well, yeah, I mean, the times are getting, you know, the risks are increasing, and that's a, you know, that's a strategy of fascism, is exactly that, to terrorize people and make them stay in their homes and not intervene. And so I can't say you should or shouldn't do anything, but I think it might not go well for us if we all take that attitude. But Norm, I gotta let you go. We have two other callers.
And thank you much, Paul.
I thank you for venting. All right, thank you so much. And let's go right to our next caller, is Camilo. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning.
You anticipated what I had to say in your response to Norm. My point was essentially that the way that you framed the question, what is wrong with all these mass killings, frames the question very narrowly. And if you look at the Times article on the Highland shooting yesterday, you can see that the way people responded is that they're thinking, well, what can we do about this demographic of young white men who are obtaining guns and responsible for these killings? And many of the answers focused on what we should do. Like some said, we should have some sort of a training, some sort of obligatory involvement of the young men, et cetera. But, you know, certainly, as you pointed out, the issues are much broader and systemic, and I think the analysis has to be broader, as you pointed out, historical, institutional, looking at all the dynamics.
Well, actually, the original question was just sort of a very overly general, just what the heck is wrong with this country, the United States, and which way America, the humorous, strange humorous song I started out with anyway.
Well, I thought it was kind of ironic that Norm was concerned about ethical or moral questions, and then towards the end of his comments said something about it's too bad we don't have the guns that they do. I mean, certainly I think most critical thing, I can understand anybody who's feeling distraught thinking about self-defense, thinking about revenge, but
actually I think you're going a little far. I think what I heard, and I'm not saying you heard, I heard better than you heard, what I heard him just sort of bemoaning the fact that they writ large, you know, the, I guess, the more extreme right wing versus, you know, the progressive left wing, whatever, however you can characterize this, that they tend to have a lot more guns and we don't. I didn't hear him saying anything more than that, but I could be wrong.
Yeah, I certainly agree with you. That's exactly what he said. But I think the way that people might take that is that, well, we need to balance it. And certainly the solutions are not going to come from violence. And I'll end by saying I take refuge in the Buddha, the Sangha, and the Supreme, the Dharma and the Supreme Sangha.
Okay.
Good day.
Have you too. You know, Buddhism is an interesting question, and I've never felt comfortable. I know Camilo has called a number of times and has brought up Buddhism a handful of times, and I certainly don't actually feel qualified. I think there's a certain, you know, quietism and in some ways passivity, he'll tear me apart, you know, if he got back online, but it just seems like that there's something about Buddhism that tends towards kind of a less, I don't know, but then, you know, there's been a lot of Buddhist activists, so I don't know. I just historically, I guess I critique, it arose at a really crucial time. I guess there was like Moses was around that time, Buddha, like several central, they call it the Axial Age. And in my analysis, and I know I'm starting to go way off, and there's people like, Dusty's online. Hold on, Dusty, for a bit. Anyway, so there's a crisis, a human crisis. There's been several, the way I look at history, there's been several key crisis points. There's been many continual crisis, basically, because we ended up just overflowing our ecological niches and expanding our population, becoming this very aggressive expansionist species, very unusual, very unique in a way, in our ability and our particular ability with our brains and our, you know, our opposable thumbs and our hands and upright posture and all that stuff. Anyway, but yeah, so we developed these sort of centralized civilizations, hierarchical, patriarchal, and it's been a very complex history. And The Dawn of Everything, the book by I can't remember his name right now. But anyway, it's kind of questioning a lot of the scholarship. But anyway, but there did develop, I think, the Buddha and some of these other figures were kind of reactions to this sort of expansionist, materialist, hierarchical kind of power-hungry type of civilization, and they took sort of different tacks to it, but they didn't resolve, in my opinion, the basic contradiction, the basic thrust of militarism. You have to rein in militarism and this drive for power, which is, where did that come from? Big question, key question. But anyway, that's just my take on Buddhism. But, I'm not, certainly not going to criticize anybody's choice of a belief system framework that gets them out of bed in the morning, gets them through the day and all that. I was going to go somewhere with that, but let's just go right to Dusty, if you can follow that. Hello.
Oh, hey. Hi. Hi there.
Hello.
There's a lot wrong with our country. And I just want to talk about that general question that you put out there. So here's one thing, one out of many that I was thinking. It was unfettered capitalism, and some people might say laissez-faire capitalism. But what I'm thinking that leads to, when you have laissez-faire capitalism, that's kind of like no control, is that what you get is a control of everything into the hands of just the few. Yeah, like control of elections, of banking, of the means of production, like food, the media, all these things in our country have become under the control of just a few. And when that happens, it makes the ability of just us, the masses of people, we can't make changes on our own because we've lost that power. And it also loses our sense of community. So that's, we can't, it's difficult for just the common person to make changes. And I just look at elections itself. Campaign finance, well, the campaigns are financed by just a few people with millions and millions of dollars. Well, how can we have fair elections? We can't even make changes at the fundamental level. We aren't even free to have the common person run for an office. Just look at the city of Portland itself. It costs a lot of money just to run for city council. Not anybody can run for city council. You need lots and lots of money. Well, that's ridiculous. We should have campaign finance reform, but this all comes down to unfettered capitalism. Well, we need to have the large number of people control, not a tiny number of people.
I want to just to push back gently on the idea of unfettered capitalism, because in a way that was all that capitalism was until, the big, let's just put it, leftist movements, the Marxist, a lot of Marxist influenced anarchists and others around, just before the First World War was a vast upsurge. And a lot of people think that the First World War was in some ways a reaction to the dangers of these mass popular movements that were threatening to actually rein in or overturn these capitalist systems, which replaced feudalism, is basically just a different form of mass control of people and resources anyway. And so capital, I think it's capitalism itself. I think we need to be really clear about that. It's capitalism itself, the ability to, the attempt to fetter capitalism. And then of course, Rooseveltism, the New Deal was a big, a big, huge shift through the Western Europe and the United States and other countries that did impose certain structural reforms, inability, the higher taxes on the corporations, then, certain safety laws and regulations and all that. That's, that's what we call the, whatever kind of capitalism it is anyway. And there's been kind of a back and forth, over the past century and more, of neoliberalism now is back towards unfettered capitalism, Reaganism, and then Trumpism was sort of a deviant extreme example of that. And anyway, I just wanted to put out there, is it capitalism itself that's the problem?
Well, it's a good question. I don't, and is there a difference between capitalism and free enterprise? Because we think, well, anybody ought to be able to set up their own business and make their product, open a restaurant, right? So is that, it, should we, is there a difference between between the two? Can we have people set up their own businesses and make their own, do their own thing?
Well, the question only arises because we had, I mean, these are historical questions. The only, you know, there used to be, you know, people had, you know, their farm, then there were people, you know, there's the blacksmith, there was the, you know, the miller, there was, you know, there's all these functions that you needed to do to get what people needed. You know, I mean, it's such a complex question because, you know, it goes, how, where do you want to start historically? But let's just start before, you know, under feudalism, people had a certain more autonomy, actually, because they actually had certain autonomy in different places, different times. You know, obviously some feudal systems were just absolutely incredibly brutal, but some of them, you could maintain a certain autonomy of your household. And people had, you know, you talk about means of production, people had the ability to you know, own their own, you know, tools of the trade for farming and, you know, like small scale craftsmanship and stuff. And anyway, so that was what there was, you know, before that. I mean, you know, go back how far you want to go back, but capitalism developed, and basically, you know, the enclosures in England where they basically enclosed the common lands, because people used to have access to common lands where my father's from in northern Italy. They still have the ability to graze animals up in the high pastures, which are common land, and there's common trails. There's a, you know, that you talk about unfettered capitalism. Capitalism came into being through the process of colonialism and the extraction of all these, you know, precious metals, and then the, you know, the development of the slave trade, development of industrialism, blah, 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 blah. So it's a deep question. So now the question is, can we carve out any space within basically a monopoly capital system? Because you got Walmart, you got Amazon, you got these huge monopoly capitalists, and that's the air we breathe, the water we swim in. We don't, you know, so yeah, sure, people should be able to do, I mean, small scale entrepreneur, sure. I mean, that's all great, but that doesn't get at the problem of the concentration of power and wealth, which is what we, you know, which most times is only overthrown, you know, despite what Camilo said, by, you know, violent revolutions, because they have the monopoly of violence. And so, you know, any successful revolution that we've seen, I guess some could argue some of the color revolutions in Eastern Europe were different. Anyway, that's a really long response, but go ahead. I'll give you a last thing, and I'd like to hear other callers at 503-231-8187.
Well, yeah, all your thoughts are really good, and I guess these are really deep questions. How do we get at, how do we dismantle this unfettered capitalist system that leads to Amazons and Walmarts now? How does that happen without a bloody revolution? But I don't have the answer to that.
Oh, darn.
It's been great talking to you. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Dusty. I was hoping someone would have the answer to that question. Anyway, oh, my God, I let Dusty go, and now I don't have any callers. Please, 503-231-8187. I might have to play more up with people until somebody calls. Anyway, well, let's see what Chris Hedges have to say. He's always good for this is a recent article, The Four Horsemen of the 21st Century: War, Capitalism, Fascism, and Mass Death. Billionaires won't give up on corporate rule. The angry masses embrace fascist demagogues. This won't end well. Actually, this is from June 22, so, you know, a couple weeks ago. Okay, we got a caller, but hold on a second. I just, you know, since I started, let me just give you one or two paragraphs, okay? It is hard to be sanguine about the future. The breakdown of the ecosystem is well documented. So is the refusal of the global ruling elite to pursue measures that might mitigate the devastation. We accelerate the extraction of fossil fuels, wallow in profligate consumption, including our consumption of livestock, and make new wars as if we are gripped by a Freudian death wish. The four horsemen of the apocalypse, conquest, war, famine, and death, gallop into the 21st century. Those who rule, servants of corporations and the global billionaire class, accompany the suicidal folly by cementing into place corporate tyranny. The plan is not to reform, it is to perpetuate the corporate pillage. This pillage, more and more onerous for the global population, necessitates a new totalitarianism. One where the billionaire class lives in opulence, workers are serfs, rights such as privacy and due process are abolished. Big Brother watches us all the time. War is the chief business of the state, dissent is criminalized, etc., etc., etc. Okay, well, you know, he doesn't, I don't want to put too much emphasis, you know, and I think I'm really smart, but, you know, I don't really know all that much. Am I putting too much weight on this pink tide in Central and South America? Hedges doesn't seem to be picking up on it. I mean, is it going to be a war between the North and the South? Is that how it's going to end up? I mean, the global North, the global South? Anyway, God, we got a full slate of callers. Oh, my goodness golly. Let's just see who that is. Looks like we've got Ruthie up first. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey there. Can you hear me okay?
I can. Perfectly.
Okay, great. Hey, I'm a first-time caller, and I was just listening in. And
nice.
Yeah. Thanks for bringing up the discussion. You asked what is wrong with the United States, and I really believe we can talk about politics until we're blue in the face. And boy, we've seen that over the last, like, well, forever, but the last 5 years, people are really, it's like an us and them mentality, no matter which side you're on. And it's very much a side thing. But I think what it really boils down to is mental health care in our country. There's still being a stigma about it, especially in certain generations, and then the affordability of it. So many people, I think, are really struggling and have a lot of anger and don't know what to do with it. And unfortunately, I think we really do take it out on one another on a daily basis. And I really think that that would change a lot in our country if we could really tap into mental health care and how to give it to many people.
Yeah, I can't disagree with that. It's certainly, I guess my question is, what are the origins of the mental health crises, mental health instabilities?
Yeah.
Where does that come from?
Well, I mean, I'm only 35 years old. I think just in my short time on this planet and what I've seen, especially with social media becoming what it is now and just seeing how that's affected people, I'm not even on social media anymore. I think there's just a lot of comparison. There's a lot of violence in our everyday media, and that's even just things that we watch on TV. You know, I have been blown away by how much just gun violence in general is even on programs, you know, that kids watch. And it's a lot of the type of violence that it's if somebody disagrees with you, you're just going to blow them away. And it's like, wow, we're showing this to 10-year-olds? This is accepted.
Yeah, there used to be a discussion about this. There was a, you know, when the really violent video games first started coming on, there was actually a, you know, this always happens. There's like this new thing that's obviously not healthy for us all.
Yeah.
And there was a, you know, but then it overwhelms and it's like, what are you going to do? It's like everywhere there's massive profits being made.
Sure, exactly. And there's also the freedom to be able to make your own choices. And I respect all of that and how you're going to raise your kids and your own choices of what you watch. But, you know, just from my personal experience of the limited time I've been here and just seeing how we've evolved with the internet and with TV and what is constantly in our faces and the things that we choose to every day to put in front of us, and we're just digesting this every day. I think there's just a lot of built up anger in this country, and then we watch things that are angry, and then we watch news that makes us angry, and then we watch a video game or some, you know, what play.
Well, there's
a video game.
There's anger and there's anger, though, you know. There's anger is a part of our makeup that is,
sure,
is necessary. So there's, I think it has to just, you know, there's healthy anger and then there's like unhealthy anger that leads in these, you know, violent sort of like people creating these little bubbles. I mean, that's what, I mean, I didn't really mean this to be another discussion about mass killers, although that, you know, it's happening so often, it's hard not to talk about it. But, you know, these people create these little bubbles in their heads and they just go off in this, their little twisted world. And yeah. It's like their own little universe. And that, and I think all the things you're talking about just are sort of accelerants. That's how I see it, accelerants of that process to spin people off into these. Sure. And then you got these bigger bubbles like the Patriot Front that they talked about on Democracy Now, or the Proud Boys, or, you know, or the Trump White House was a very strange little bubble, you know, or January 6th or whatever. Anyway, and I would just say that I think these are accelerants of a process that was already underway, and I, you know, identify it with this sort of expansionist, capitalistic industrial system myself. But anyway.
Yeah. Everybody just start taking care of yourselves and take your mental health seriously, because, boy, it can get really toxic if we don't.
Indeed. And I hope that KABU is one, I don't know, I like to think KABU's a, you know, not a refuge. I just think we're kind of a somewhat of a safe space from the generalized toxicity. I hope that I don't add to toxicity. I think talking about it and sort of unmasking it and you know, I think toxicity is when it kind of gets concentrated and sort of secretive and all that, that's where it builds its power. So I think the more we shed light on it, the better, I think. I don't know.
Yeah, it's talk therapy in a way.
Exactly. I've been in therapy. I've actually holding this book, which Madness is Civilization, when the diagnosis was social, 1949 to 1980, is a really a brilliant book. There's this period of time where people really were taking seriously the idea that the individual stability, mental stability, emotional stability was really tied to broader social dynamics, mm-hmm. patterns, and, you know, identified it specifically in this hyper-aggressive, expansionist, capitalist system, society, and that sort of when the drugs took hold, and yeah. I'm not criticizing anybody's choice today. I have taken powerful psychotropic drugs to rein in a crisis I had, so I understand. But in general, I don't think they're as nearly as helpful as the pharmaceutical. But anyway, when that whole model came in, the medicalized model, as people say, that this whole social diagnosis really went out the window. Anyway, I have a few extra copies of this book I got at a discount and is hoping to. So if anybody wants one, they can get in touch with me through KBOO.FM Wednesday Talk Radio. But anyway, I just throwing that out there. I was anyway. So thanks for calling, Ruthie.
Yeah,
appreciate
absolutely.
It.
Yeah, thank you.
All right. There, I went off on my own tangent when Ruthie was having some good things to say as well. Anyway, Madness is Civilization. It's like, it could be Madness is Capitalism. I've talked about this a lot, you know, the connection between capitalism and mental health and et cetera. I mean, it's tied to everything. But yeah. So, okay, we got Dante up next. Are you still with us?
Yeah, sure am.
What do you got to say?
Hey, well, I am sitting in the parking lot. I've got to go in to get some stuff for work in a minute, so I'll just take any other comments off the air. But, I just wanted to give you another sort of perspective on Buddhism. I've been studying for a while, and I think when you look at the acceptance that it is generally attempts to convey, it's more of the acceptance of right now. And that might keep you from going crazy. It doesn't mean that you have to accept this for tomorrow or for next time, but right now I have to accept what is, you know. Mm-hmm. But that's not why I wanted to call, because I think that our biggest problem in this society is greed and the glorification of greed. I mean, I have a lot of very, very humane people in my life that I respect greatly, And I think it even bleeds out into them and to me. And that is the fact that, you know, popular culture tells us that we should be Elon Musk. We should be rich. We should, and to get there, the best way really is to be greedy.
Okay, so wait, let me stop. Let me stop you for just a second. You, I know you have to go in, but yes. So you, what you're saying is not so much the greed itself, but the inculcation of the greed. And I think that's a really important distinction that people don't necessarily get when people talk about greed, as if it's sort of this moral kind of thing. No, it's a systemic thing, and in some societies, don't inculcate greed in the individual like ours does.
Exactly, and that's what I think that's the big problem here is, like you said, I think that there are a lot of societies and countries where you aren't, lionized because you've been the greediest person on the block and you have the most.
In fact, you might even be casticized.
You might even be despised a little
bit. Right, exactly. That's the dynamic. That's the mechanism, yeah.
And so, you know, maybe a good part of the problem is popular culture and the media, because that is what they glorify.
Right. Well,
I think.
Yeah. Well, I mean, but they're controlled by monopoly capital like everything else, which is, we know what the problem is. And, you know, the little train that could, or whatever that phrase is, Pekebu and others like us, you know, do the best we can. But we certainly don't have the platform that, you know, Fox News or, you know, God bless him, CNN, or, you know, whoever, even Alex Jones. Anyway, yeah, great to hear you, Dante.
Yeah, good talking, and thanks for the program. I'll keep listening.
Okay, bye-bye. We got two more callers. This has been a really lively day. I guess I struck a nerve. I just wanted to say that I was wondering if anybody would call and push back. And, you know, I've done insight meditation, which does derive from the Buddhist tradition, and I respect it greatly, and it's helped me. It has helped me from, quote, going crazy. It definitely has helped me, and so I appreciate it. In fact, I finally did it last night after a while, and it was grounding as heck. I tell you, grounding as heck. So no, the practices are wonderful. I guess it's like it's in the realm of the philosophy, and like I said, I'm no expert, and other people, you know, we could get into a whole hour-long discussion, but we won't, because I know that Lee's up next. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi, Paul.
Hi.
Earlier you were, you know, expressing what I think is a model of society and culture that's based on Western European traditions, and I wanted to point out that there are other ways of organizing societies and culture
what?
Than that model.
No way.
And that we might be better off as a species and relative to other species on the planet if we got rid of that model and, you know, opted for something else.
Yeah, but what do you mean we, and who's going to have the power to change the model?
Well, currently we're locked in a model that's controlled by patriarchy, and I have long advocated that if we wanted to exercise some control over the patriarchy, there needs to be an alternative matriarchy that says, no, don't do that.
Right, sure. But those are things that are easy to say. But what I'm talking about is the power, the real politics of power. So how do you make that happen?
Well, you and I can't do it because, you know, we're males. It's going to require females to stand up and take a leadership role.
Right, but then that just abdicates your so somehow magically the females are going to arise and overthrow the patriarchy. Well, it hasn't happened yet, and it doesn't seem to show any signs of it. Sure, of course, historically, patriarchy, war, militarism, the development of feudalism, capital, sure, it all goes together, true. But I actually think we all have to work together to find some way. And I'm going to, in a minute, I'm going to throw out some of my ideas I've been developing. But anyway,
Just be careful about the term feudalism, because among medieval historians, they no longer consider it an applicable description of that period of time.
Okay. What's the more appropriate terminology?
You know, male hierarchy, in terms of the political structure, but, you know, at an economic level, it's all based on manorialism.
Uh-huh.
Okay?
Well, I thought that's what feudalism was.
Pardon?
I thought that's what feudalism was.
No.
The manor and the village.
No, that's manorialism.
Right.
Okay. The other thing that I want to point out is a number of years ago, I read a book entitled The Nine Nations of North America. And basically, I think that part of the problem with this country is that it's too big, and it allows for certain sections, certain parts of it to have excessive amounts of control over other parts.
Mm-hmm.
And that potentially, maybe the best thing you could do is break it up into smaller units.
Yeah, but that implies that there is some force that has the potential to do that. I'm saying the problem is in the agency. Where is the agency that's going to make any of these changes that you, I, and the Deep Blue Sea want to make happen? The problem is we don't have the agency, and we need to develop the agency. And how the heck are we going to do it? Saying something needs to be done or somebody needs to do something just ain't going to cut it. I'm sorry.
Are we going to wait until it collapses?
I don't know.
I mean, is that the agency that's going to eventually...
It might be. It might be.
Well, you know, I certainly hope not, because there's a lot of damage that's going to happen between now and then.
Right. Well, so we got to get it together. But anyway, we got another caller, Lee.
Thank you.
And I wanted to give a few minutes at the end for this hot idea I've been thinking about. But it looks like Asher is still on the line. We might actually have another caller after that. Go ahead, Asher.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I've been an off and on listener for a long time. Thank you. Good conversation. I need to get to my point. Years ago, in political science classes, there was a student who looked up some minutes from corporate meetings and on microfiche back in the day. And she found literally in these corporate meetings efforts to undermine the populace through means of division, misinformation, and making us and confusing us essentially. And in these meetings, they're talking about ways to divide us and keep us from organizing, so to say. And you've got in the minutes, they even quoted laughter in the audience as ways to in their comments and laughing at the ways that they can effectively take more power.
They're cynical and devious, aren't they?
Yes, they are. And this is in their minutes, in the notes of their meetings. It was public information back then. These days they hide that stuff. You might be able to find similar things. But back in the day, it was all public record. And I went in researching something, and I found some minutes of some major corporations meeting, and even laughter in quotation, because they're laughing at the ways that they can literally take more power and do their thing, right? So
yeah.
My point is for anything that we can do, all depends on information, all depends on message, and all depends on what people are hearing. And today, what we hear from the right-wing talking heads is they're all saying the same 3 to 5 points every day, all week long, and drilling it into all their listeners' heads. Where they have the boogeyman of the day, the boogeyman of the week, and they repeat it until everybody knows what they're talking about. And whether they're lies, misinformation, or somewhat accurate, everybody says the same thing. And they have organized and clear messaging, good or bad. And in the end, for the left, for our movement, for the thing to take hold, messaging is utterly important.
The problem is
without that critical, organized messaging, movements can't take hold.
Indeed, that was the power of the Marxist-based movement. It gave a totally different framework, analytical framework. You know, it gave agency to the producers, the people who are doing the grunt work, and gave them a sense of agency in society and history. And had tremendous power, and you know, they did kind of keep it simple. Anyway, I got one more caller, and I did want to throw out a couple ideas, so I got to let you go, Asher. In fact, I'm going to throw out
my last point is we can do that. Okay. Organizing the left into focus groups and think tanks into limiting the millions of messages in the left wing umbrella into a few points, so then that could be repeated.
Okay.
And that can be the agency that we need.
All right. Well, you know, you should write me and, you know, hit me up on these ideas at kboo.fm, Wednesday Talk Radio, if you want. Thank you for calling, Asher. Before I go to Linda, who's going to have the last word. Okay, my idea. Okay, get ready. So I think the only thing that has a chance of protecting us from absolute, total annihilation, devastating climate change, the continued road towards fascism, towards devastation, social and ecological devastation. The only thing is a global framework of demilitarization. Within that, then maybe we can tackle a bunch of other stuff. I see that as the primary contradiction. Anyway, maybe Linda has something to say about that or something else. Go ahead, Linda.
Hi. I am calling in response to whether Buddhism is a passive religion.
Uh-huh.
I should say that there is a major movement of socially engaged Buddhism all over the world, primarily started by Thich Nhat Hanh, who's a Vietnamese Buddhist teacher, and then several others. Well, one is Joan Halifax, and another is Tara Brach. And so, you know, there are many, many, many Buddhist practitioners who are working very hard on social issues and in improving the world.
Well, I could also say there's been a lot of good Christians too, but the main thrust, I'm not comparing to Buddhism, but okay, so how about Myanmar? I was wondering how Buddhists think about that, Myanmar.
I don't feel that I am qualified to answer that question.
Well, no, because it does seem to be a bit of a thorn in the whole, you know, I mean, because they're super aggressive. And so the whole idea of Buddhism as being, you know, this non sort of aggressive sort of framework or moral framework, religious, seems to be belied by that. So all I'm saying, I guess, is that there are contradictions within that maybe, anyway, it's a big subject. And
well, yeah, I mean, you know, no, I think no religion is without its dark side.
Okay. That works.
And I think you could look at Myanmar as the dark side of Buddhism, which is very sad. Just as people do things that Jesus would never have condoned in the name of Christianity, because Jesus was like this amazing pacifist, brilliant teacher, just the way Buddha was.
Well, then I guess my pushback, if I have one, and we only have like 2 minutes left, is both, in both cases, some argue that Jesus was actually a more of a revolutionary figure who was actually trying to overthrow the colonial system, you know, the imperial system of Rome in Jerusalem. He was actually more of a political figure, and actually Christianity sort of developed, and so as it developed, it sort of took that out of it completely and became something completely different. So, you know, I don't know, you know, if there's a sort of, a, you know, sometimes there's a difference between the originator and what develops too. And then there, you know, it can go in a thousand different directions. Anyway,
well, obviously, subject. Yes, that's true of all religions. People can take it wherever they want to go in their own heads, you know. But the great thing about Buddhism is you have to sit and think about, I mean, you have to deal with your own mind a lot. And so you might have the ability to catch that when it's going into that kind of bad direction that you're describing.
No, totally. And I think that's one thing that's really great about the practices as they've been, brought to the West and sort of developed here. And the problem is they don't necessarily give us the tools to deal with, like, say, fashion, you know, well, they, maybe they do. I mean, if people all maybe meditated together as they went, before they went out to confront the Proud Boys, maybe that would kind of ground them. Anyway, that's how my mind goes to these big political questions, because that's what's, you know, it's scary. The times are scary. Let's just...
I couldn't agree with you more. We're in some scary times here.
All right. Well, that's going to be the last word, Linda.
Okay.
We are right out of time.
Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, no, thanks for calling in. Always, we had quite a bit of callers and really a wide variety and interesting. Anyway, that's it. I don't know if Pear is up next, but something is here on your great, wonderful KBOO community radio station. Signing out, Paul Rowland, bye.
Which way, America? Which way, America? Which way, America? Which way to go? This is my country, and I want to know which way America is going to go.
There is many a road to travel, many a hill to climb. I'm gonna find the straightest road and walk it till the end of time. Which way, America? Which way, America?
You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. The time is 8:59 a.m. Next up is Fight the Empire.